Welcome to the Teck Resources Q2 2018 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference is being recorded on Thursday, July 26, 2018. I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Fraser Phillips, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much, John. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Teck's second quarter 2018 results conference call. Before we begin, we'll draw your attention to the forward-looking information on slide 2. This presentation contains forward-looking statements regarding our business. However, various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. With that, I'll turn the call over to Don Lindsay, our President and CEO.
Thank you, Fraser, and good morning, everyone. I will begin on slide 3 with some highlights from the second quarter, followed by Ron Millos, our CFO, who will provide additional color on our financial results. We will conclude with a Q&A session where Ron and I and several additional members of our senior management team would be happy to answer any questions. And I'm delighted to report a record first half for Teck. And in fact, we've now had 7 quarters in a row of EBITDA, $1 billion or more than that, and the actual average during that time is $1.5 billion per quarter. And this has really put the company in great shape as we look forward to an exciting growth program. But before discussing the quarter, I would like to comment on the announcement we made yesterday about the changes to our board of directors. Teck is very pleased to announce that Dominic Barton has agreed to join Teck's board of directors effective September 1st, 2018. And many of you will know Dominic from his time at McKinsey & Company, where he has been the global managing partner for the past 9 years. And among Dominic's many accomplishments, he served as chair of the Canadian Minister of Finance's Advisory Council on Economic Growth. He is a recognized thought leader on creating long-term social and economic value, and he brings tremendous global perspective to our business, including extensive experience in Asia. And we're very excited about the role that he will play at Teck in the future. We've also announced yesterday that our longtime chairman, Dr. Norman Keeble, will retire from the board of directors at year-end. And as part of our succession planning, Dominic Barton will assume the role of chair on October 1st. Also at that time, Norman Keeble III, who has been on our board since 1997, will become vice chair of the company. We will, of course, have much more to say about Norman's retirement as it approaches, but I wanted to say just a few short words today. Norman is an officer of the Order of Canada. He's a member of the Canadian Mining Hall of Fame and of the Canadian Business Hall of Fame. He's worn many hats over an extraordinary career, including scientist, explorer, entrepreneur, industry leader, and more recently, author. And to paraphrase one of his favorite sayings, over more than half a century with Teck, Dr. Keeble never once rested on his oars. And we're looking forward to furthering honoring and celebrating Dr. Keeble's achievements and his legacy in the months ahead. Also, as you will have seen in our press release, we will shortly hold a process to seek an additional partner for QB2. Our objective is to hold our interest at the 60 to 70% level, and a transaction would most likely be announced in the fourth quarter. A decision to proceed with the development will be contingent upon regulatory approvals and market conditions, among other things, and we are exploring various potential financing alternatives for the project. Turning now to Q2, the highlight of the quarter was Fort Hills achieving commercial production. We have now added another operating business unit to our portfolio with a high-quality asset that will generate cash for the next 45 years or more. The Fort Hills plant startup has exceeded expectations with respect to both production volumes and, most importantly, product quality. Suncor has done a great job building that plant. Fort Hills is ramping up to its nameplate capacity of 194,000 barrels per day and is completing the transition from capital spending on construction to now generating cash flow from operations, which means a very significant swing in our cash generation profile. Overall, our operations continue to perform well, resulting in another strong quarter of operating results. We set a new record for quarterly zinc production at Antamina, and strong mining performance from our steelmaking coal operations contribute towards record material movement in the first half of the year, which gives us a lot of operational flexibility going forward. Now, as a result of our solid operating performance, we've improved our guidance in our copper, zinc, and energy business units for 2018. And we expect to close the $1.2 billion sale of our two-thirds interest in the Wadena Dam today, in fact. This will strengthen our liquidity to close to $7 billion and put us in a good position ahead of a potential sanction decision on our QBD project later year. In fact, our liquidity will already be significantly in excess of the capital cost of a 60 to 70% interest in QB2, and that is, of course, even before any entry fee that a new partner might pay. In addition, we announced on July 25th that we will pay our regular base quarterly dividend of 5 cents per share on September 28th to shareholders of record at close of business on September 14th. And finally, we were pleased to be named to the best 50 corporate citizens in Canada list by Corporate Knights for the 12th consecutive year. Turning to our financial results for the second quarter on slide 4, revenues were $3 billion, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was $1.6 billion, and after adjusting for unusual items, adjusted EBITDA was $1.4 billion. Bottom line, adjusted profit attributable to shareholders was $653 million, or $1.14 per share. That's $1.12 per share on a diluted basis. And that is a significant increase from the $580 million, or 99 cents per share, in the same quarter last year. Details of the quarter's earning adjustments are on slide 5, and as you can see, there are very few adjustments in Q2 of 2018. I'll now run through the highlights by business unit, starting with steelmaking coal on slide 6. Sales volumes were slightly lower than expected in Q2. Preparations for two separate CP rail strikes resulted in around 300,000 tons in lost rail capacity. But importantly, demand remains strong. We had orders from customers in place that would comfortably exceed our original sales guidance of around 6.7 million tons. As I mentioned earlier, we achieved record material movement in the first half of the year, and that will allow operational flexibility going forward. Looking forward, third quarter sales are expected to be around 6.8 million tons, subject, of course, to our logistics chain performance. For the full year, our annual steelmaking coal production guidance remains 26 to 27 million tons, though currently we now expect it to be near the lower end of the range. Our operating cost guidance is unchanged. With increased rail fuel surcharges due to higher diesel prices, we now expect our transportation costs to be at the high end of our guidance range of $35 to $37 per ton. And finally, some good news. We plan to invest approximately $12 million to complete and evaluate the Mackenzie Redcap detailed design study at Cardinal River. The Mackenzie Redcap development is expected to supply approximately 1.4 million tons of steelmaking coal production per year and has the potential to extend the Cardinal River operation for approximately 9 years from the planned closure in 2020. And beyond 2020, this additional tonnage would be over and above our current planned production capacity of around 27 million tons in the Elk Valley. Our copper business unit results are summarized on slide 7. In Q2, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up $137 million from the same quarter last year, reflecting higher prices and volumes and lower costs. Net cash costs after byproduct credits were down 5 cents U.S. per pound from the Q2 of last year, helped by strong cash credits for byproducts. At Highland Valley, copper ore grades and recoveries were higher than originally planned due to a timing issue related to areas being mined. Grades are expected to decline in the second half of the year as we mine lower grade areas consistent with the mine plan. We have basically brought forward some higher grade ore from 2019 and expect to finish 2018 above plan. On the technology side, an autonomous haulage pilot is on track to have 6 trucks operational by year end. Following a successful trial of shovel-based ore sorting technology over the past 6 months, we now plan to fully operationalize the technology, which is now being extended to the rest of the main shovel fleet. And on QB2, we continue to advance execution and operational readiness, with detailed engineering and design now approximately 70% complete. On the permitting front, the Indigenous consultation process, I'm proud to say, is now complete, and the environmental evaluation is finished. We expect to receive the final permit approval documents after the Environmental Evaluation Commission votes on the project and that is anticipated in the first half of August. Looking forward, we now expect full-year copper production to be in the range of 280,000 to 290,000 tons, which is an increase from before, and we have lowered our copper unit cost range to US$1.30 to US$1.40 per pound after byproducts. Finally, you will have seen in a separate press release today that Newmont has acquired NovaGold's 50% interest in Galore Creek. We've entered into an amended partnership agreement with Newmont, and we look forward to working with them. Our objective for Galore Creek is to complete an updated pre-feasibility study over the next 3 to 4 years to improve our overall project understanding and economics. And our share of the investment to complete this work will be approximately $12 to $20 million Canadian on an annual basis. As you know, the Galore Creek project is part of Project Satellite, an initiative focused on surfacing value from Teck's substantial base metal assets located in low-risk, stable jurisdictions. On slide 8, we turn to our zinc business units. And as a reminder, Antamina's zinc-related financial results are reported in our copper business unit. In Q2, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up 19%, or $38 million, from Q1 of 2017, and that reflects higher prices and higher volumes. At Red Dog, contained zinc sales were slightly ahead of our guidance, reflecting ongoing tightness in the zinc concentrate market. And zinc production was 20% higher than a year ago due to higher grade ore and improved recoveries. And as expected, Red Dog's unit cash costs after byproduct credits were above our annual guidance range, and that, just to remind you, is consistent with our normal seasonal pattern. Refined zinc production at Trail Operations was similar to Q2 of last year. And looking forward, Red Dog shipping season commenced on July 6th, we expect Red Dog contained zinc sales to be around 160,000 tons in Q3, again reflecting the usual seasonal pattern. But based on strong performance at Red Dog, we have now increased our overall zinc and concentrate production guidance to the range of 655,000 and 667,000 for the full year. And just as a reminder as well, we will have extended maintenance at Trail Operations starting in Q3 for the KIVCET furnace, which will result in lower lead production in the second half of the year compared to 2017. And this is maintenance that is required once every 4 years. Our energy business unit results are summarized on slide 9. And as I mentioned earlier, commercial production was achieved in the quarter, and the plant startup has exceeded expectations with respect to both production volumes and product quality. And please note that we have reported our energy results from June 1st to June 30th. That is the first month of official commercial production. Our share of Fort Hills production was around 750,000 barrels, or almost 25,000 barrels per day in that period. This reflects some unusually wet weather that impacted production in June and also in July, but it is not expected to have a material impact on operations for the full year. We've also reported an operating netback of $13.85 per barrel of bitumen, and that's in Canadian dollars. The calculation is summarized on the slide, and there's also a reconciliation table included in our quarterly press release. So looking forward, full production at Fort Hills is now expected to begin at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and that is 3 months earlier than previously anticipated. And production guidance has now been increased for the full year, with our 21.3% share now expected to be 8.5 million to 10 million barrels of bitumen. So that's an increase over previous guidance, and it'll start 3 months earlier. Guidance for cash operating costs has also now been lowered to $28.50 to $32.50 per barrel in Canadian dollars. And, of course, it will, in order to achieve that range, it will end up significantly lower than that by the end of the year. Finally, at the Frontier Project, the regulatory application review is continuing with a public hearing before a federal and provincial panel that's scheduled to start on September 25th. A federal decision statement on that can be expected sometime in mid-2019. And with that, I will pass it over to Ron for some comments on the financial side.
Thanks, Don. I'll start with our liquidity on slide 10. And as Don mentioned, Our liquidity is currently over $5.6 billion, and that includes $1.7 billion in cash and U.S. $3 billion of the undrawn committed credit facilities. As Don mentioned earlier, we expect to receive $1.2 billion in cash with the closing of the Juanita Dam transaction later today, and that would strengthen our cash balance to about $2.9 billion and our liquidity to close to $7 billion. This will put us in a good position ahead of a potential sanctioning decision on the QB2 project later this year. In the meantime, we're continuing to build cash on our balance sheet and progress the engineering, and that's reducing both the funding and the execution risk for that project. We also only have $220 million of debt maturities prior to 2022, and our strong credit metrics compare favorably to our diversified and North American peers on a pro forma basis with the expected closing of Juanita Dam sale. On slide 11, I've summarized changes in our cash during the second quarter. We generated $1.1 billion in cash flow from operations. We spent $345 million on capital projects, including Fort Hills, and our capitalized stripping costs were $175 million in the quarter. We paid $119 million on financial investments and other assets, including the U.S. $52.5 million paid on closing of the transaction for the acquisition of the additional 13.5% indirect interest in the QB2 project through our purchase of IMSA, our minority partner. And that transaction simplifies the ownership and capital structure of QB2 and gives us flexibility on financing options for the project. So we now have a 90% equity interest and a 100% funding interest in QB2. We paid $70 million in interest and finance charges and $28 million for our regular quarterly base dividend of 5 cents per share. And after these and other minor items, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of around $1.6 billion. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Don for his closing comments.
Okay, thanks, Ron. I'd like to wrap up by looking forward to the next key catalysts, or some call them valuation milestones. For the second half of 2018, we anticipate receiving the final approval documents for QB2, and that should happen next month, in fact. We expect the partnering process for QB2 to be completed and to be in a position to announce a transaction in Q4. And then, of course, we hope to sanction the project also probably in Q4. Full production at Fort Hills is expected at the beginning of the fourth quarter as well. We aim to complete the Highland Valley 2040 pre-feasibility study also in Q4. And then we also aim to complete the feasibility study at Zafranal in Peru, and to submit the CIA document in the same quarter. And in 2019, we aim to complete the feasibility study on Nueva Union, that to probably by Q3, and we also expect to complete the pre-feasibility study and submit the CIA for San Nicolas, that's in Mexico, in the second half of the year. So there is a lot to look forward to in the next 6 to 12 months. Before I close, I would be remiss if I did not comment on the risks that have arisen in the global economy and the volatility that have caused that has arisen in commodity markets in particular. But I do want to say that demand for our products and the underlying fundamentals of our commodity markets remains strong. However, government policy changes, including tariffs and the potential for trade wars, have created uncertainty in global markets, and that threatens to slow global economic growth. And that, in turn, has resulted in a significant correction in commodity prices over the past few weeks. That being said, as you can see, we have taken significant steps to insulate our company from commodity price volatility. We have improved operations and reduced unit costs. We've strengthened our balance sheet by reducing debt, and we have significant liquidity and strong cash flows. And as a result, we are well positioned to navigate this period of uncertainty facing the global market. Just a summary statement before we turn to questions. It really was an extraordinary quarter. While earnings itself of $653 million was terrific, and it's a record earnings for the first half of the year at $1.4 million, we also increased our guidance in each of zinc and copper and energy. And the QE2 partner process is really significant. If you think about it, that will make a very significant difference in terms of the financial requirements for us in the coming years. If we, for example, just to use an arithmetic example, if we were to sell a 30% interest, that would reduce our capital needs by $1.5 billion and then add to that the entry fee of some sort. So we believe that's a, a transaction that will reduce financial requirements by over $2 billion U.S. The permitting progress for QB2 is almost finished. Fort Hills, the final startup of Train 3, went incredibly smoothly, and it will be operating at full capacity by the fourth quarter. The Waneta transaction will close literally later today. That's $1.2 billion more cash, which takes us close to $7 billion of liquidity, which, you know, significantly exceeds the capital that we'd be required to come up with for QB2. We've got a great new partner in Newmont at Galore Creek. And we had a very managed, very well-managed, very smooth succession program for the chairman. So very proud to say that Teck is in terrific condition, and we're now open for questions.
Thank you. If you have a question, please press star 1. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing star 1. You may cancel your question by pressing the pound sign. Please press star 1 if you have a question. There will be a brief pause allowing you to register. Our first question is from Orest Swolkina from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm just curious on the coal business. Don, you mentioned earlier that you had demand for more than you could supply in Q2. And I'm curious about the guidance for Q3 at 6.8 million tons, because when I look back the last couple of years, you've been able to ship more, closer to about 7.5 million tons for the last 2 years in Q3. I'm just curious if the 6.8 guidance, if that reflects some anticipation of demand slowdown, or is that more issues with either mine production or logistical issues?
Thanks. It's a good question, I can assure you we had very, very strong sales in Q2, and we wish we would have been able to deliver more. But for more details, I'll turn it over to Rail Foley.
All right. Thanks, Don. So, Orest, we do have sales in place for Q3. Demand is continuing to be very strong, and of course, our estimated sales, our sales guidance, reflects all the considerations that you have mentioned. So it is really ensuring that we have appropriate coal to meet demand at the ports, and the port inventories continue to be tight. So we have sufficient coal to meet demand, but we, no doubt, we are tight, and that is what we're observing in the world. So there has been a correction in the coal price, but the coal price levels at over $172 on average this morning still reflect very strong demand fundamentals.
But could you, in theory, deliver more than that, or are you capped right now by rail or loading constraints?
We could deliver more than 6.8, but we also have to be reasonable in the guidance that we provide.
Okay. And just as a follow-on, I didn't see any mention in the release about the board approval for the Neptune coal terminal expansion. Has that been approved, or is that deferred?
No, that has been approved. It's underway and going very well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Chris Terry from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, Don and team. My question is really around QB2. I was just looking for a bit more color. So the project is 70% complete from a detailed engineering perspective. How far do you think you have to get that through when you look at doing a transaction? Do you think the key step is to get the permitting in place? Do you need to progress that further before you could look at the actual transaction with a buyer?
The short answer to that would be I don't think we need to progress it further. It will progress further just in the normal course. We had had a target of wanting to have engineering design up to the 80% completion level before sanctioning, so clearly we're on track to do that. We have had, I should say, an awful lot of interest in people being our potential partner from around the world, and many of them would have already known that this was a possibility and done their numbers. So we will wait before formally starting the process to get the permit in hand, just because that's clearly an important valuation milestone. That's very close. But after that, we'll be fully into it, and I think the potential partners are quite ready for that.
Okay. And the follow-up to that, just two parts. What would you look to do with the cash if that comes in? Is the first part. And secondly, when you go to evaluate who the potential partner is, how are you going to assess the, is it just the highest bidder, or is it the bidder that also brings some sort of operating expertise or build expertise or whatever it might be? How do you assess who the best partner would be?
Yeah, no, very good question. I'll take the second question first. We look at it, there's probably three categories of potential partners. They're the very large mining companies that have strong operating expertise and construction expertise that really help to validate the project's long-term value and would be a great partner to have for the long term. Remember, we have about 100 years of resource at QB2. Right now, we've currently only published a mine plan for 25 years, but it uses only about 25% of the resource. There are also different partners out there that clearly are more marketing oriented, that are very, very keen to get their share of the copper concentrate, which is going to be a higher grade, very clean concentrate, which is clearly going to be in big demand as the world evolves. And then there's different financial players that have stepped up and have proposed interesting structures where they provide financing and really reduce the risk to us, but while also still leaving us the potential, you know, 5, 7, 8 years down the road that we could buy it back from them at a prescribed return. So there's a range of choices. It won't be just the highest bidder, but of course the valuation that put on it will be a significant factor. So we're looking forward to it, and because there are very few projects like this out there, people sort of thought that the world really only had Quellaveco and QB2 as opportunities for those who wanted to grow in copper with a large project. Quellaveco, of course, has already been done, and this looks like it's the last one for some time. So I think we'll have some scarcity value involved in that, and it should be a very interesting process.
Thanks. And just the potential use of cash, depending on what that would be from the sell down.
Yeah, no, we're in a very, very good position. It's an interesting question. As we've said, we'll have close to $7 billion of liquidity before the end of today, and then there'll be some entry fee coming to QB2. So there are a number of choices. First and foremost, there's always return of capital to shareholders, and we'll be making that decision at the November board meeting as our policy describes. And that'll be a combination of cash dividends and buyback. And so clearly we're in a very strong position from that point of view. We could also reduce debt further in a market that's quite volatile and, fair bit of geopolitical uncertainty out there. That might be appropriate. And then, of course, we do want to steward our capital for these potential growth opportunities. Although by doing the partnering process of QB2, we would require less than the market would have thought previously, and our financial resources will significantly exceed what would be required for QB2. So that'll give us other opportunities. As you know, we have two large projects, QB2 and Nuevo Union, that will be sort of core to portfolio for decades to come. And then within Project Satellite, we have five copper projects, two of which could be in production by 2022, 2023. And while we don't know whether we're going to build those or sell those, both of them are being advanced on the valuation milestone change with full feasibilities and pre-feasibilities. So we do want to maintain some capital for things such as that. But we have a lot to work with, some very interesting choices, so should be quite interesting.
Thanks, Don. Good luck with it all.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just wanted to switch topics a little bit on zinc. It's the worst performing metal year to date, I think. Is that justified?
We don't think so. I'm going to turn it over to Andrew Stonkus in a minute. But sometimes the market sentiment or the sheer weight of money can overwhelm fundamentals. And we think zinc is the most extreme example of that. When we look at customer demand
and treatment charges in particular as a signal of how tight the market is and different actions being taken by Chinese smelters and so on, we believe the zinc market is still very tight. But Andrew, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Greg, I think Don summarized it pretty well. It's demand is still for metal is still very firm. When you look at North American steel mill galvanized production, steel mills are running at high utilization rates. They're looking at adding on additional galvanized capacity. So the regional market in North America is strong. So is the global market. When you look at global galvanized production, it's continues to increase. So demand for metal is there. On the raw material side, concentrate side, we're still at historically low treatment charges of approximately $40 to $50 in the spot market. So that's considerably below the annual benchmark term. So and the concentrate market continues to be extremely tight. There is additional mine production coming on stream later on this year. But a lot of this new mine production is also not sulfide production. It's a reclaimed tailing. So you know, that's another aspect of the marketplace. It is looking for materials that are not traditional supply lines. So that's going to be a challenge, I think, for the industry to continue to bring on new mine production and concentrate feed for the marketplace. The Chinese mine, domestic mine production continues to be basically flat with the environmental restrictions, both on the mining side and on the smelting side. So when we look at the metal drawdowns in the Shanghai inventories, they continue to fall down or decline. Smelters are not running at full rates in China, so demand in China is firm, and the inventories in China continue to fall. So overall, it's the fundamentals are there. Technical trading for the situation is causing short-term volatility, but longer-term, the fundamentals still remain very strong.
Don, I just want to go back to another question then. I repeatedly get asked whether oil is still a core business for tech, or is it a core business for tech? Is it, and would you potentially monetize your oil sands business now that you've got Fort Hills up and running?
Yeah, I think two comments on that. First of all, we look at it as a mining business, and when we went into it some 10 years ago, we think of it as a large open pit mine, shovel truck operation. We have a lot of skill and operating experience and expertise in that. And it's also a great geopolitical jurisdiction. Even under an NDP government, it's a lot better than many other jurisdictions that if you're sitting in my seat, you get to choose whether to go into or not. And it's very tax effective for us to, the capital we've invested there provides shelter against operating cash flow from the coal mines or Highland Valley Trail and so on. The technology is proven, and we're delighted that the product we're producing is, from a carbon footprint point of view, it actually ranks in the middle of the pack of all the oil that's refined and consumed in North America. So that's a very different situation than normally people think of with oil sands. So there's a lot of reasons to hold it as a great high-quality core asset, and we think once it's through this transition year, 2018, as it starts up, that depending what your assumptions are for oil price and differentials, that this will be literally one of our best mines right up there with Antamina or Fording River, and in terms of like ongoing EBITDA for the next 45 years. So in an ideal world, we'd love to have it as a core asset for the long term. It provides that much stability. And the nature of this whole business is that the risk is in getting it built. Once it's built, and, you know, if you have a high-quality result like we've had where the startup is just so, so exciting, then it's just a source of sheer cash flow for several decades. And you see that in Suncor's results and CNR results and CNRL results, that once these assets are built, they are extremely valuable. However, if we go out a couple of years to 2020 or 2021, and, you know, the full debottlenecking is finished and it's running with cash costs of $20 Canadian a barrel or lower and running significantly above nameplate capacity. If we don't get, you know, proper value recognition in our share price, then we would look at some other form of transaction or something to ensure that the shareholders benefit from the value that's being created. And whether that was, some sort of spin out or sale or partnering or I don't know what. We'll look at it. But no, we wouldn't look at it for at least a couple of years. We need to finish the job right now. It's gone really well. As you've seen, we've increased our guidance for the year. And we've moved ahead the timetable from when we think it'll be running at nameplate capacity. But we need to finish that job first and do the debottlenecking next year to take it up even higher. But if, mid to end of 2020, we're not getting recognition for it, yeah, we would do something. That's our job.
Okay. That's fascinating. Thanks, Don.
Thank you. The next question is from Brad Rosenberg from Overbrook. Please go ahead. Just one quick moment. Yeah, just one moment. I'm sorry for the delay, sir.
Sorry, John, where are we at?
Emily, sorry, there's just a slight issue with the system here. It should just be a few seconds. Mr. Rosenberg, your line is open, sir.
Great. Hey, sorry about that. I don't know what happened, but thanks for taking the question. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to follow up on the question before about zinc fundamentals. Obviously, you've had an increase in the LME inventories over the past 4 months now. And there's a good amount of supply that's projected to come on. Just curious what your thoughts about those projects, to the extent you could comment on them.